I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I said, "Do you know who did it?" And he said, "We have a very good idea who the responsible person was."
Uncover Bomb on Board, investigating the biggest unsolved mass murder in Canada, CP Flight 21. Get the Uncover podcast for free on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Available now.
Hi, this is Lou. Just to let you know, this episode contains mature subject matter. Just so you know.
Even though I was lonely, I didn't miss my husband. Not really.
From CBC, this is Love Me, a show about the messiness of human connection. Episode 7, Make Believe. I never really felt like I belonged to my family. I look a lot like my dad, and it's clear that I am related to these people. But for a long time, I've been quietly looking for clues as to why I didn't feel like I fit in very well. One day, I read this article about lost twins. Some of the stories were about twins that were separated at birth and reunited later in life. And one story was about a twin who was miscarried, but the surviving twin wasn't told until she was in her 40s. And the thing about these stories is that the survivor always felt alone. Always felt an inexplicable sadness just under the surface. And they never knew why until they learned they had a twin. And then all of these bad feelings made sense. It was like a spell was broken. Simply, instantly, you're not alone. You are one of two. And so somewhere along the line, I decided I have a lost twin. That might sound silly, but it's a decision to believe, to make believe, as a way to feel less alone.
Once upon a time, way, way high up in the sky, there was a beautiful castle. And in this beautiful castle, there lived a king, a great king named King Jacob. When I was 18, I moved to New York. I moved from a very small town in southwestern Ontario. It was a huge, huge change to go from like one-lane traffic to all of a sudden just a sea of humans that Manhattan is. I remembered very distinctively standing on a street corner and calling my grandmother from a payphone because I couldn't figure out how to cross the street with the different timing of the lights, and I was so overwhelmed. Being a student in New York is really expensive, so I started looking into babysitting as a way to make some extra money. The first job interview I went on was way up in this building in Battery Park that was like way up on the 21st floor. And it was as high up, I think, that I have probably ever been in an apartment building. I was pretty sure there was going to be like a Sherpa waiting for me. And I met this awesome family through this door, and the interview process was really interesting. They were asking me questions like, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite book? And at some point in the middle of the interview, this little boy, Jacob, who was 3 years old and very wiggly, all of a sudden pounced on me, and he told me, your name's not Jillian, you're a tiger. So I finished the second half of my interview as a tiger. And I ended up getting the job. Jacob was full of imagination. His favorite color was red, and there was a period of probably about a month where he insisted on wearing nothing but tie-dye. As we spent more afternoons together, we kind of became sort of like best friends. So we had our own personal greeting. We had this nose flagging system. That's where you take your thumb And you stick it on the end of your nose, and then you wiggle your four fingers up in the air, almost like a wave.
He would always be so excited to see me, which was a great feeling. Finding this family, it kind of felt like I had found this little pocket of safety in this crazy sea that is New York.
I'd usually pick Jacob up from school at around 3, and then we'd head home and
dive into some sort of imagination game. His building was really interesting because the Hudson River surrounded it, so it was perfect landscape to have a king of the castle kind of scenario. His favorite story to play was to be King Jacob, and so I would play the alligators who lived in the moat below. There was Al and Isabel, and so Jacob would love to call on these alligators and talk to them about various adventures or protecting the castle. And they each had their own distinctive voices. Al might come in a little strong, but
Al, alligators reel down here like this, and he watches everything.
Isabel was very light and up, and she wasn't always about what Al wanted to do, but she was very kind and she made very good cookies.
I had been babysitting Jacob for a year and a half, and I was picking him up from a pottery class, and I was ringing the buzzer to go in and pick him up when this man came up next to me, and he just started making small talk, and I answered very politely back, and the door opened for me to come in, and he followed me into the building. So we were waiting for the elevator and still making small talk, and then all of a sudden the hair on the back of my neck went up and I knew something was wrong. And then I said, you know what, I'm actually just going to take the stairs. And so I immediately started running up the stairs, and I heard him stop the elevator doors behind me, and he started chasing me up the stairs. And I could see the door to the pottery class where I was headed, and I got to that landing when he caught up with me, and he grabbed me from behind. It all kind of happens in a blur, but he started pulling at my shirt, and he kept trying to put his tongue in my mouth. We were struggling back and forth, and I kept trying to get away, and I just remember looking at the door handle, trying to get my hands out to that door handle, and he lost his balance. So I managed to get up, and I finally got a hold of the door handle. And the next time he hit me up against the door, we both went flying into this classroom full of 4-year-old pottery students. And he just bolted. The teacher was obviously startled, and she was a little bit angry at me, as she thought maybe it was my boyfriend and we were in some sort of fight. And I finally said, I'm Jacob's babysitter. I'm just here to pick him up. I don't know that guy. So she immediately called the police. And then I took stock of what I looked like, and I realized that my nose was bleeding and my shirt was wide open, and there was just all these big 4-year-old eyeballs kind of blinking at me. And then I looked over and I saw Jacob, and he just came over and he wanted to talk to Al Alligator, because Al Alligator was the one who always came and got the bad guys from our kingdom. And so he wanted to call on Al to come and get this bad guy. And I just couldn't do the voice. And then Jacob started to cry. This thing that I had kind of struggled with my whole life, this monster that I was kind of pretending hadn't existed in my old life in my small town, had kind of found me here in my safe place, and I let it into this beautiful family. And now this little boy has this horrible story. I was sexually assaulted for the first time when I was about 6 years old by an older cousin. And then working in a restaurant, I started working in restaurants really young. Especially in a small town, there's very much this mentality of boys will be boys. At one point, I was actually putting pieces of plastic in my underwear to go to work, just so I wouldn't get groped in places I didn't want to be touched. I really thought that I had left it all behind, that Manhattan and New York was kind of like a fresh slate for me. but it followed me. So after that incident with Jacob, our relationship changed. I took a few days off, and then I went back to work, and I had to bring Jacob back to that same pottery class where it all happened. And he insisted that I not leave, so he wanted me to stay in the pottery class with him the whole time. And he was super anxious. He wasn't doing pottery with the other kids. He just kind of sat there and stared at me. A couple of days later, with Jacob, we were walking on the street, and this guy on this motorcycle, for some reason, he decided to rev his motorcycle and say, "Hey, nice tits, I'd like to take you for a ride." I panicked, and I grabbed Jacob and went into a Starbucks, and we had to wait there for quite a while I calmed down. I just remember feeling so small and powerless. And I just remember looking at him, and it was in that moment that I knew that I couldn't be his babysitter anymore. That I didn't feel like I could keep him safe, because I wasn't confident that I could keep myself safe. So I gave them my notice and I quit. The last time I saw Jacob was probably about 6 years ago now. I still get Christmas cards with their whole family. And although I have like no actual contact with Jacob, I've looked him up. He has a YouTube channel where he makes videos. There's a lot of space and lasers and time travel. I can't tell you how much I truly cherish that YouTube channel. It was so great to see his imagination still so alive. Sorry. I don't know if he remembers me, but if he does, I hope he thinks about Al and Isabel's grand adventures. And forgets the time the monster showed up. Once upon a time, way, way high up in the sky, there was a beautiful castle. And in this beautiful castle, there lived a king, a great king named King Jacob. And around King Jacob's castle, there was a moat guarded by Jacob's two best friends, Al.
Alligator.
And Isabel. Oh dear. Al and Isabel would look after the castle. They would make sure that everything was running smoothly.
It was my fault. I was wrong. I didn't realize how special you were. You did nothing wrong. You're perfect.
Always get a voiceover actor to play your ex.
Okay.
Always. Because it's the only way you get them to say what you want.
You're perfect.
I don't know why we broke up, because I don't quite know why we got together. Except that I bullied him into it. It had been a year and a half since my husband died, when a man in a bar looked at my feet, looked at my face, and smiled.
I love your shoes.
That was all it took. In that little bar, warm and full of music and cigarette smoke, he said hello and he told me he liked my shoes.
It's true. I really liked those shoes. Black, but purpley black, almost liquid. Like an endless pool at the bottom of your legs.
He was the drummer in the band playing that night. They'd covered Wild Horses. I wanted him. I wanted him to love me and I wanted to love him, and I wanted it all that very second.
Like an endless pool at the bottom of your legs.
Up until that moment, I hadn't felt hungry for anyone new. I was a widow now, sleeping alone for the first time in 15 years, just trying to get the bills paid and the house clean and the kids brought up. Romance seemed like just another chore I didn't have room for on my to-do list.
I could almost see my reflection in those shoes.
But when he smiled at me, it seemed that I could let go of being the widow with the imaginary black shawl over my shoulders and that cold wind I swear I could feel swirling around me. I could let all that go because the truth is that even though I was lonely, I didn't miss my husband. Not really. I missed the idea of him. I missed having someone around who took out the trash, who shared the cooking, the bills, who balanced out the right side of the bed. Someone who once in a while told me they liked my hair, or that I looked nice in a coat, or a scarf, or a new pair of shoes. But I didn't miss him. I just felt a hole where he had once been. So when I looked down into my shoes that night and saw this new man smiling back at me, it seemed to me that I had the chance to fill that emptiness.
Do you want me to do what's in the script, or what did you like?
With a seamlessness and a cold-hearted haste.
More emotion?
I offered him my husband's role.
Like this?
As though he were an understudy, stepping in for the leading man.
I love your shoes.
He came over one night when my kids were away and he stayed and that was that. He sent me flowers, he did the washing up after dinner, he made me an omelette and it felt pretty good. I didn't have to sit alone on my couch anymore. He could sit next to me. But then he'd go into his studio and play his drums and forget to call. He'd turn up stoned to dinner at my mother's. He popped pills to get to sleep or to relax or expand his mind. He'd turn up the music too loud and tell me his boring stories about drumming and making it big. And yet, for not one single minute did it occur to me that this thing between us should end. Because even if the understudy's not quite right, the understudy's there. He's alive, right in front of you. And the show must go on, right?
I'm having trouble with this line. I just can't get the rhythm of it. What about I say something more like, nice shoes. They'd look really good at the foot of my bed.
I told him I loved him. And he half smiled and half winced. And then he left. And I fell apart. The whole thing had only lasted 6 weeks. I wrote him nasty emails. I wrote that he was selfish, stupid, no good in bed. He was useless, boring, talentless. I never liked him anyway. Those emails weren't fair. He hadn't ever signed up for the role I'd forced him to play. And he didn't know how broken I was because I didn't know how broken I was. But I was broken. And at the time it felt like I'd been broken by this stranger leaving me. This stranger who'd like some shoes of mine. But really, I'd been broken before that, by watching my husband die. And it took a while. But I finally realised that even though he could deliver all the right lines...
I'll take this trash out for you. I like your hair.
This guy...
I love your shoes.
Didn't sound anything like my husband. And suddenly, I didn't just miss the comfort of marriage. I missed the man I loved. Not the idea, but the man. The man who didn't just help with the cooking, but who made a spinach and cheese pasta, even though he didn't like spinach. The man who kept quoting lines from The Godfather as I struggled in labour with our first child. The man who rubbed my bare feet after a long day in shoes. That man.
That man who was never coming back. Russell. I didn't know just how badly I was trying not to miss him until his understudy broke my heart. But I did. I do. I miss him. And I lie in bed alone now, and I'm pretty much used to it. And I pay the bills, mostly on time. I hate taking out the trash, but I do it. And sometimes I get lonely, but I don't mind it so much because it's real. And it reminds me of what I had.
Love Me is produced by Mira Burt-Wintonik and Crystal Duhaime. On today's show, you heard Gillian Welsh. You also heard The Understudy, produced with Sophie Townsend. It featured Andy Leonard. Special thanks to the ABC and Graham Isidore. Original theme music by Tim Kingsbury. Scoring music by Murray Lightburn. And additional music by Valleys and Lee Rosevere. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or at cbc.ca/loveme. And while you're there, drop us a line and let us know what you think of the show. Here's a sneak peek for our final episode of the season, coming up next week.
I had to ask what ending his life looked like. And they told me that, you know, they would stop his feeds. Essentially, he would starve to death.
And then the judge just immediately says, "Raise your right hand. You're taking the juror's oath. You are juror number 12. And I thought, oh no, what have I gotten myself into?
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.